Drones were all the rage when they first hit the consumer market. They were the number one most wanted Christmas present in 2016. But like a lot of technology these days, drones first got their start with military applications. While commercial drones used for recreational purposes and videography cost anywhere between a few hundred dollars to a couple thousand dollars, military drones cost a fortune. I'm Christy Ai, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be looking into the military drone industry, their costs, and their capabilities. Drones have permanently changed the way that warfare is conducted. Drones became the most iconic instrument on the War of Terror, and in the last 10 years, the number of countries flying drones has more than doubled. Today, more than 80 countries have some sort of drone capability. Now, a modern drone is made up of several large components, such as the frame, propellers, the receiver for sending and receiving information, motors to fly, and batteries. Many are manufactured primarily from carbon fiber composites or aluminum to be light but sturdy. And these are manufactured in large plants located throughout the world, though mostly in China and surrounding countries. U.S. military drones can range up to tens of thousands of dollars. And the common Predator drone that the military used in Iraq and Afghanistan is roughly $40 million per system. You also have the ever-popular Reaper drones that carry laser-guided bombs and other types of air-to-surface missiles. These cost about $32 million and are used by the UK, Netherlands, France, and Spain air forces. Meanwhile, smaller surveillance drones with high-tech cameras cost around $195,000 per unit. And then you have tactical drones like the Fulmar that is able to fly for up to 12 hours at a max range of 90 kilometers that cost around $35,000. They can be armed and are run by pilots on the ground through a satellite link-up, which makes them highly deadly and specialized. These military drones are designed to have secure communication and have sensors that possess more range and versatility than your average commercial drone. They also have quieter engines, which makes them more difficult to detect and can be quickly assembled into weapons. The global military drone market is projected to reach over $23 billion by 2027 as they're changing the face of traditional warfare. Drones can respond quickly and are cheaper to make and maintain compared to planes. They can also be operated at a distance and have automatic functions which can save manpower and lives. They put fewer lives at risk, and the military can also cut down on the cost of training soldiers. And there's also the argument that drones also minimize civilian casualties compared to conventional airstrikes and put pressure on terrorist organizations with the constant surveillance. Drone technology is continuing to improve, with engineers now working on equipping them with the ability to self-repair, self-land, and stay aloft for months instead of days. So now let's bring in Scott Ritter, former U.S. Marine Corps intelligence officer and author. So Scott, who has the most advanced drone technology? Is it the U.S.? And who's the biggest competitor? And how advanced are other countries' drone capabilities?
I mean, to answer that question, you'd have to actually have a detailed knowledge of everybody's drones and the technology that went into it, and et cetera. But I think the United States is a extraordinarily technologically advanced country, and we spend an awful lot of money on our drones, and I would imagine that our drones have some of the finest technology out there. But they're just because we have the best technology doesn't mean we have the best drones. Drones are a tool, and you know, to give you an example, you could have a Lamborghini, which is a very expensive car, some of the finest technology in the world. But if I ask you to take that Lamborghini off-road over a hill, you won't be able to do it. You're better off with an old Jeep because the Jeep is suited to the task that you're giving it. American drone technology was developed or, you know, reached its primacy during the global war on terror. We developed killer drones, which were adaptations of drones that were originally developed for reconnaissance work. We strapped missiles on them, and we used them to target people in a relatively benign environment, meaning there's no active air defense. The fact is, no American drone system, none of our mainstream drones can survive in heavily contested airspace, and they're far too expensive for us to be throwing them away in combat operations like that. The drone we lost off the coast of Crimea was a $32 million drone. You compare and contrast that with, for instance, some of the Iranian drone technology that's allegedly been provided to Russia recently, the Shahed 136. Its unit cost is between $20,000 and $30,000. But it's able to inflict millions of dollars worth of damage. The Russians are making extraordinarily good use of a loitering drone known as the Lancet. It's destroying tanks and armored vehicles and artillery vehicles and other high-value targets. These systems can't cost more than $30,000-$40,000 each, and yet they're destroying targets that are worth millions of dollars. So I think that it's a wrong question to say who has the best technology.
And how has Iran been able to get so advanced in drone technology? And what is the average cost to produce these simple types of suicide drones?
First of all, I think people need to understand that Iran is not a third world country when it comes to technology. In fact, if one pursues this further, you'll see that Iranian teams enter mathematical Olympics and oftentimes place in the on the podium and dominate the top 10 spot. This means that from a theoretical mathematical standpoint, the Iranians have some of the finest scientists out there, and a lot of what we're talking about here is how to take theoretical mathematical capabilities and turn it into practicalities. The Iranians have shown an amazing ability not only to adapt existing technology that they acquire from abroad, but also develop their own technology. This is why Iranian ballistic missiles today have, extraordinarily accurate warheads. And the other thing is that because the United States and its allies, Israel, etc., have subjected Iran to near continuous conflict over the past several decades, Iran has a perpetual laboratory of conflict, of war, upon which to test out operational concepts, including drone technology. And so, what we've seen is the extraordinary theoretical capabilities of Iran, joining up with the practical opportunities that Iran's situation affords. And Iran has been able to develop, cost-effective systems that accomplish the mission, and the mission is an active one against enemies such as Israel and the United States that have tremendous, counter-drone capability. So, the Iranian drone, doctrine, combined with the Iranian drone technology, is a very effective one, especially when applied against a Western target.
Has the Russia-Ukraine conflict brought about a revolution in terms of the way drones are used on the battlefield?
If you're a military professional in the world today and you are not studying how both Ukraine and Russia have used drones, then you're wrong. We live in a day and age where drones are now going to become part of the concept of maneuver. You will no longer just talk about your air power, your fire support, your maneuver elements. Drones have become a technology that is involved in all three. It provides long-range reconnaissance. It provides target designation capabilities. It provides weapons delivery platforms. It becomes a weapon itself. It can be used for electronic warfare, for jamming, and if you're not incorporating every aspect of drones into the total spectrum of warfare being waged, then the enemy will have an advantage, because I can guarantee you this: they're looking at it and they're adapting to it. There won't be a modern army down the road that isn't incorporating drone technology in a meaningful way into their overall concept of operations, and they will be looking at the Russian-Ukrainian conflict as the case study upon which they draw the lessons that they're being used to build their own capabilities.
And how much more advanced can drone technology get? Will most warfare conducted in the future be unmanned?
Well, what's interesting, we say unmanned vehicles, the key aspect of that is that we're not putting a pilot at risk, but we are. That's the nature of drone warfare. One of the most dangerous jobs on the battlefield today is to be a drone operator because you, in order to operate that drone, you have to have connectivity to that drone. That connectivity will at some point in time involve an aerial link that can be detected and traced back and targeted by the enemy. And so, you know, much of the advantages that are had by not putting a pilot in the plane, directly in the plane, so therefore you can take the drone into areas that you wouldn't risk a pilot. The pilot is still on the ground, and the pilot is very much at risk, especially in the tactical standpoint where you have people near the forward edge of the battle area who can be struck by artillery. You know, but then the other thing is, if you have a signal, the signal could be intercepted, signal could be jammed. One only has to take a look at the American drone that was called the Beast of Kandahar. I think it was the RQ-179. I don't have the number exactly, but it was a stealth drone. The Iranians watched it take off and land from the American military installation in Kandahar, Afghanistan, intercepting the satellite link that was used to control the aircraft. And when the ground controller at Kandahar passed it off to the operational controller, who was based out of Nevada, you know, the Iranians detected that handover, figured out how to intercept it. And when the drone, you know, did some covert reconnaissance over Western Iran, or Eastern Iran, the Iranians intercepted it, took control of the drone and landed it and got their own technology. I bring this up to point out that as good as drone technology is, there's a counter. The enemy is developing counters. Right now, the people, you know, the soldiers on the ground have drone guns that are used to jam the signals, disrupt the signals, take control of the drones, capture the drones. So I think we need to be careful about saying that drones are going to become, you know, that's the future of war. It's like any weapon. You know, you have the weapon, you learn to use the weapon, you incorporate the weapon, but like every other weapon, it has a counter. There are pluses and minuses in using this weapon. And I think the drones will have a major say on the battlefield, but nothing in the end changes the reality that you have to have a boot on the ground in order to claim the ground. A drone cannot capture territory. Infantry captures territory, armor captures territory, but a drone doesn't capture territory.
Are there more or less casualties in these drone proxy wars than in traditional warfare?
Depends how you use the drones. I mean, if you're carrying out targeted assassination using a drone, I mean, what are you comparing it to? Because it's a different kind of war. It's not like a battalion-sized assault on a heavily fortified complex. There's going to be significant casualties in that. You're going to suffer dozens, if not, hundreds of casualties trying to take down a something of that nature. Targeted assassination by a drone is only about killing one person, maybe a couple, but it's not large-scale warfare. However, if in support of that battalion assault on a fortified position, you have a drone overhead that is designating targets for artillery fire and they're helping increase the accuracy and therefore the lethality of artillery fire, then you've done it. The drone is a tool, and it depends how you use the tool, and to what effect when you're dealing with this the idea of lethality. Let me just say that the modern battlefield is extraordinarily lethal. General Cavoli, the American commander of forces in Europe, the supreme allied commander for NATO in Europe, recently said in a defense forum in Sweden that the level of violence that's taking place in Ukraine was unimaginable by NATO. Unimaginable by NATO. That means that, you know, this military alliance that's ostensibly preparing for large-scale ground combat in Europe had no clue what the reality of large-scale ground combat in Europe looked like. And as a result, they can't wrap their heads around the fact that you lose tens of thousands of men, in a very short period of time. So, The reality of the modern battlefield is that it's extraordinarily lethal, and I think drones make it even more lethal.
Thank you so much, Scott, but please stick around. Scott Ritter will be joining us right here after the break. And when we come back, nations have found a way to fight modern wars crafting cheaper but more reliable drones. We'll have more after the break.
So what we've got to do is identify the threats that we have.
It's crazy.
Confrontation, let it be an arms race.
Who is on offense? Very dramatic development.
I personally am going to resist.
I don't see how that strategy will be successful.
Very critical time.
Time to sit down and talk.
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back to The Cost of Everything. While the U.S. dominates and refuses to export high-end Predator family of drones, other nations have found ways around this. The TB2, which is a Turkish-made aircraft from the Baykar Corporation, was a cheap, widely available drone that changed how smaller nations fight modern wars. Baykar turned to technologies readily available on the commercial market to make the TB2 from a mix of domestically made parts sourced from international commercial markets. There is a GPS receiver made by Trimble, a modem from Viasat, a Garmin navigation radio, etc. Now, while the U.S. Reaper drone costs $28 million, the TB2 only costs about $5 million. And the TB2 has shown up in conflicts in Azerbaijan, Libya, Ethiopia, and now Ukraine. This is the first mass-produced drone system that medium and smaller states can get a hold of, and it is capable of coordinating long-range attacks or releasing laser-guided bombs on targets. The same DJI Mavic quadcopters that videographers and YouTubers use for filming have also now been deployed in conflicts in Ukraine. Other DJI drones have been spotted in Syria since 2013, and they have been modified to drop grenades and bombs. And finally, you have the Iranian-made Shahed 136 drone, which are self-detonating drones that only cost around $20,000. Because they are so cheap, intercepting them with a more expensive missile incurs a cost to the defender. And these kamikaze drones have been used by Russia and are difficult to shoot down when sent in large numbers. In response, U.S. has been sending the Switchblade kamikaze drone to Ukraine to use in attacks. These drones have been used in Afghanistan and Iraq and are small enough to fit in a backpack and are launched from a tube. It flies to the target area and using its camera, the soldier can easily detect and lock on the target. While they're light and portable, they aren't exactly powerful, basically the equivalent of a handful of 40-millimeter grenades that you can throw 10 miles away. Kamikaze drones are becoming more popular in modern warfare, replacing missiles in multiple missions. They're also used more than normal military drones. Firing one Switchblade would cost around $4,000, while firing one Javelin anti-tank missile would cost around $78,000. Because these drones are so cheap, they're disposable, which means that these Switchblades can carry a warhead and drop it and not have to worry about making back a return flight. Comparing this to the TB2 or the Reaper drone, which costs over $30 million, losing a Switchblade, it's not a big deal. And for more, let's bring in again Scott Ritter, former United States Marine Corps Intelligence Officer and author. Now, Scott, we're hearing a lot about hypersonic missiles being used by Russia and that China has developed hypersonic technology as well. So what exactly is a hypersonic missile and how does it differ from a intercontinental ballistic missile, for example, or a regular cruise missile?
The key aspect of a hypersonic missile is survivability. By traveling at the speeds that they do, they confound an enemy's ability to detect, track, and then put a weapon system on them to shoot them down. Basically, the Russian hypersonic missiles that are being used in Ukraine cannot be shot down. And that means that if Russia fires one, it's going to hit its target. And this is disconcerting for any potential enemy. It's especially disconcerting for the Ukrainians, who have to know that every time one of these Kinzhal missiles is fired, the target it's aiming at is going to go up in smoke. The Chinese have developed similar technology, and it's has the ability to overwhelm U.S. air defenses, both on in terms of on ships and on the ground. This means that if China wants to sink a U.S. aircraft carrier, it's going to sink a U.S. aircraft carrier. If it wants to hit an American airbase, it's going to hit that airbase, and there's no defense system for it. So that's the advantages for that. It's a double-edged sword, though, because the United States is busy trying to develop its own hypersonic weapons, and we've had some success on some systems, but for instance, our version of the Kinzhal, our air-delivered system, has not been working. We just did a test recently, and it failed. It's difficult technology, and sometimes the United States seeks to squeeze too much or push too much into a given design, and when at the end of the day, less is better. I mean, the Russian design is very simple, very elegant, very effective, and it's being employed. The United States seeks to put too many bells and whistles on its toys, and they don't work. Hypersonic capability, especially when you add maneuvering at the end, so coming at high speed, but now it's maneuvering, so there's no predictability in its track, makes it impossible for air defenses, at least at this point in time, to track them, to target them, and to shoot them down.
Will hypersonic missiles become like this type of suicide drone technology we're seeing on the battlefield, in the sense that they will become cheap for even poorer nations to develop and use?
The thing about most weapon systems is they're pretty expensive when they first come out, but eventually, especially if you start mass producing them, you can get the costs down. And as we become more experienced in this technology, things that are cutting edge just become second nature. And yes, at some point in time, this technology will make it down to nations that otherwise could not have afforded this technology. Right now, it's a cutting edge technology that I think those nations possessing it want to retain the advantage that accrues by having that weapon system, especially if your opponent doesn't have it. But at some point in time, as this world starts to, break up into various ideologically based factions, the us versus them mentality, we'll see that there might be pressure to push the hypersonic technology down to proxy forces to use because of the risk that's accrued when, for instance, the United States and Russia fight directly. We don't want that. So we can't have a situation where U.S. hypersonics and Russian hypersonics are being fired at each other from the other side. But if Russia is able to push hypersonic technology down to a proxy and that technology is used against the United States, or if the United States does the same and uses the technology against Russia, that makes the consequences of this less. So I do think in the future that there will be a trend towards getting at least some aspects of hypersonic technology down to proxy forces that can then use them against principals. Like I said, either a Russian proxy against America or an American proxy against Russia.
Will a rise in cheaper technologies level the playing field when it comes to the U.S. military dominance we've seen in the 20th century, after World War II and even the earlier parts of the 21st century?
I mean, war is extraordinarily complex business, but at the end of the day, it's about killing people, straight up. And so the question of whether or not the playing field is leveled, it depends on answering two questions. What is your capacity to kill people, and what's your capacity to absorb casualties? It doesn't matter what about the specific technology. The bottom line is, if you can kill more people than they're willing to accept, at the end of the day, you win. If they kill more of your people than you're willing to accept, they win. And drone technology be part of the killing factor. But no, there's just no way a smaller nation at the end of the day will be able to be on a level playing field, even if Iran and the United States went to war. While Iran has certain, things that that enhance the immediacy of their defense, the fact is, if the United States was to mobilize its total capability, non-nuclear, we would beat Iran, because it's a war of attrition. All war comes down to attrition. So, the question is, what is the political cost? Can Iran make the political cost of war such that the United States would never seek to fully mobilize, because there would be a detrimental political price to pay at home? I think that's what we're looking at. But at the end of the day, the bigger nation's going to always have the advantage.
Thank you so much, Scott Ritter, for joining us today. Unfortunately, military conflicts bring about the extremes in winners and losers. Countries are faced with heavy casualties on both sides, destruction of land, city, and infrastructures, and losing all of the progress that was made. Now, for decades, high-end precision strike American aircrafts have dominated warfare. However, the conflict in Ukraine has changed everything, showing that low-budget models made in China, Iran, or Turkey are just as devastating. Their widespread usage has changed how drone combat is waged and who can wage it. And while the tactical advantages are clear, what is also sadly clear is that these weapons will take an increasingly horrible toll on civilian populations around the world. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.